Hello, and welcome to another episode of Famous Failures, where I interview the world's most interesting people about the failures they've had in their lives and what they learned from them. I'm your host, Ozan Morol. Before I introduce today's guest, I have a request from you. The podcast is fairly new, so I would really appreciate your help in spreading the word. You can do that in one of three ways. You can tell your friends about the podcast, you can subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform that you're listening on, or you can leave a review on iTunes or Google Play. In addition, if you'd like to keep in touch with me and say hello to me, you can subscribe to my weekly newsletter, The Weekly Contrarian. It has thousands of subscribers, and readers call it the one email I look forward to each week. So every Thursday, you'll get a list of tools, articles, books, and other gems that challenge conventional wisdom and change the way that you look at the world. You can sign up for that by going to my website, ozanmorol.com, or texting my first name, Ozan, O-Z-A-N, to 345-345. And if you sign up now, you'll also get a free ebook called The Contrarian Handbook, 8 Principles for Innovating Your Thinking. And again, you can get that right now on the go by texting O-Z-A-N to 345-345 or heading over to my website, ozanmorol.com. Today's guest on Famous Failures is Ryan Carson. Ryan is the CEO of Treehouse, which is an online technology school that aims to revolutionize education by providing debt-free training to aspiring coders. Ryan is not ashamed about his initial failures as an entrepreneur. Actually, his rocky beginnings were what motivated him to evaluate his motivations very early on in his entrepreneurial journey and avoid a boatload of heartache down the road. He eventually found a true understanding of his why and a professional purpose that he was ready to fight for. I hope you enjoy our conversation as much as I did. Without further ado, here is my interview with Ryan Carson.
What have been the two or three most valuable failures that you've had?
I would say the first was my first business. It was called Flight Deck. And it was a simple web app that was designed to send large files, kind of like, you know, Dropbox now. Basically, you know, I succeeded in launching it. It was, you know, I was a one-person company. I built the app. I marketed it. I just realized that there was just so much I didn't know. So it was valuable in that sense that I realized you really do have to learn sales and marketing and every aspect of the business. You can't just build an app. You got to really dig into all these things. Otherwise, you won't be successful.
And what happened to the company?
Basically, built it while I was working at another job, kind of on the side. And then I was able to get one client that paid me £3,000. That was kind of in perpetuity license for them. And I just was trying to get, you know, whatever I could to get some money in the bank. So the idea was, hey, let's have this design company pay to use the software forever and let's make it, you know, a couple months of runway so I have, you know, the ability to quit my job and do this full time. So with that, launched it and at the same time got married, kind of a big event, you know, my life, quit my job, getting married, starting this company. I worked every day up in my top bedroom, you know, by myself, trying to make this thing work. It's almost scary how much I didn't know back then. You know, knowing a little bit more now, and I'm sure I'll say that, you know, in another 20 years, it was scary how little I knew when I was 40, but, you know, just tried to make it work, tried to sell it, tried to market it, you know, got a couple more clients that paid me £200 monthly. So kind of started building monthly recurring revenue, but just got to a point where I was making about £1,000 a month in revenue. And I just kind of hit a wall with my motivation, too. What I learned from that is that I needed a much deeper why for the business. And I just realized, what am I doing? Like, I'm not passionate about sending large files. And, you know, and I'm not ready to go to the mat for this thing. And so you probably hear this a lot in your interviews, but the reason why I've been able to endure through Treehouse for 7 years, you know, we've had big ups and big downs, is because I have a why that's so deep that I won't quit because it matters too much to me. It's not because I'm super talented as a CEO and entrepreneur. It's just that I particularly care about this business, you know, at an emotional, spiritual level. But it'd be good for people to realize, but I didn't care about the first business. So it's not like good entrepreneurs never, ever quit. It's that they never quit at the idea that they're passionate about.
Of course. And I'm familiar with Treehouse, but for the benefit of those who are not, how would you describe the why of Treehouse?
It's basically, I want to build the future of education so I can help as many people as I can. So it's related to people, and that matters to me. You know, I really want to, you know, when I'm dead someday, I want, you know, people to say, Ryan changed, you know, ideally millions of lives. I feel like that would be a life worth living.
Absolutely. And that's such a powerful why. I'm not surprised that you keep waking up morning after morning with so much enthusiasm, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's a great first failure. Any others?
Yeah. You know, we tried an experiment with not having managers, and it's sort of like Holacracy, but it was kind of our own version of that. And it failed ultimately. And I guess that's what experiments are for, but it really proved to me that, you know, people need and want to be trained how to be good managers. People want to be led in a healthy way. Not, you know, most people do not want to be CEO entrepreneurs. And, you know, instead it just, you know, I learned, we just need to spend time and money training our managers how to be good managers versus, you know, removing managers. And that kind of goes back to a general theme of just not fighting gravity. And what I mean by that is there's just these, you know, time-tested rules about business and life. And it's best not to try to innovate around those, but instead, you know, innovate around something that can be innovated on. You know,
sure.
And I think human nature is not something you can innovate. You know, it's the way people work mostly is the, you know, the product of our, you know, billions of years of evolution. So it's kind of not worth doing that. It's just better to focus on the business that you're innovating in.
Especially if a structure has been proven to work well in the past, it's probably better to spend your efforts on innovation elsewhere.
You know, none of this is perfect, right? So it's more just accepting no matter what system you have, it's going to not really work amazingly well. So just keep going, you know.
Now, at one point, and I get this question a lot, like, at one point, do you realize that an experiment like the one you tried with no managers is actually a failure? It's not working. So for you, what was that turning point where you realized that this innovative system of no managers just wasn't doing what it was supposed to do?
It was pretty straightforward. We just saw our revenue kind of flatline.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's like, whoa, this is not working, you know, so let's change it. I should have seen it sooner, but, you know, c'est la vie.
What would you say was hardest failure you've ever had? And what advice do you wish you had when you were navigating that failure?
I would say one of the harder ones was last year where we had to let about 20 people go to cut to profitability. It's ultimately, every failure is on the shoulders of the CEO, right? So,
sure.
And so ultimately had to own that and say, it's on me, you know? And I think what I learned from that is important to communicate clearly to people what's happening in the business. I think I was communicating an optimistic message because I am an optimistic person, but wasn't truly connecting the dots for everybody about, you know, the areas of the business that were struggling. And I should have just, I think, been more clear about that. That's kind of one thing that I think related to that is realizing, you know, every business needs very, very, very clear focus. You know, we crossed the barrier to the size of company where as a CEO, you know, I needed to be laying a very, very clear strategy, but starting to trust and empower people to get that done and getting involved in the details less. And so my behavior of kind of zooming in and zooming out was destructive and hard for people. It's very hard. I mean, you have to, like, how do you hold people accountable, but, you know, yet give them room to maneuver? And I think the answer comes back to this kind of, you know, regular cadence of accountability and then letting people do their jobs in between those.
Yeah, that balance between micromanagement and then being too hands-off is a difficult one to strike.
I think especially if you're like me, like you have a personality where generally, you know, you don't enjoy being kind of a hard ass. It seems like some people just either don't mind or they kind of enjoy that. Whereas, you know, unfortunately, I don't like doing that. And it makes it very hard for me sometimes to, I'm either kind of, you know, angry because something's not happening or really nice. But I'm learning to walk this, you know, calm middle ground where you hold people accountable and you do so in a calm way, you know.
Right.
And, you know, it's kind of like, okay, we're going to get this done. You know, you've agreed to get this done. How's it going? Okay. You know, next time you've agreed to get this done, how's it going? Okay, it's still not going well. Okay, the third time, you know, you've agreed to get this done, it's not getting done, now something's going to happen, you know.
Right.
That kind of calmness to it, like, you know, sucking kind of the personal nature of that out and just being kind of calm and businesslike about it. I guess it's just realizing, listen, you know, we all have a contract here. It's a business contract. Like, you know, people are hired for results, and you're hired to be a good boss, and you just both need to do what you're supposed to do. And people know that if they don't do what they're going to do, that, you know, unfortunately things will change, but no one wants that to happen. So I think just treating people like adults for both good and bad. Hey, I'm going to treat you like an adult and trust you to do what you say you're going to do, but I'm also going to hold you accountable to it.
How are you failing right now?
So I'm doing a lot of high-level sales right now and kind of enterprise sales and, you know, large kind of business development. And I think I'm not asking people to buy. I think I just need to close. And if people say no, just move on. That's something I literally am sort of changing today.
Okay. And what do you think is holding you back from asking for the sale?
I don't like rejection. You know, I don't like being seen to being just, I'm, you know, specifically asking you for something, you know, for some reason I shy away from that, and that's just not helpful to anybody, you know. And if people, you know, are going to find what I'm selling valuable, they're going to want to buy it. And I just need to ask, you know, and if they don't find it valuable, then they're not going to buy it. And that's okay. You know, I just need to move on. And this is kind of sales 101. So anyone who's a good salesperson they're listening will probably be laughing, but, you know, unfortunately as a CEO, you have to learn all this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's something that I've struggled with too. And I'm a law professor, but then I have this project on the side and I write books and I've got a consulting business. And it was, I struggled with that problem. I'm still struggling with it, is how do you ask people to buy something from you? I think it was partially rejection. And then for me, at least, selling always felt a little icky for some reason.
Right.
So it took me a long time to get comfortable with it.
Yeah, which is weird because, you know, it's like, we all have something that we want people to buy, and that's okay. So if I don't believe in it, you know, that's something different. But if I believe in it, then I should have zero problems asking people to buy. So I'm kind of realizing that, you know. But yeah, you're right.
Absolutely. And then for you too, especially, I mean, if the alternative to what you're offering, so you're offering a debt-free education, the alternative to that is just a, you know, graduating with no job, with a crushing load of debt, I think the choice is pretty
right. Yeah, exactly.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening. Two things before you take off. First, if you don't want to miss out on future episodes of Famous Failures, please subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you're listening on, and be sure to leave a review on iTunes or Google Play. Second, if you'd like to join thousands of others who receive a short email from me each Thursday with a list of articles, books, tools, quotes, and other gems that help you discover how extraordinary thinking produces extraordinary results, you can text my first name, which is Ozan, that's spelled O-Z-A-N, to 345-345. So once again, that's my first name, Ozan, O-Z-A-N, to 345-345. Or if you're in front of your computer, you can head over to ozanvarol.com and drop your email address. If you act now, you'll also get a free ebook called The Contrarian Handbook, 8 Principles to Innovate Your Thinking. As always, thank you for listening and see you next time.